Welcome to April on the Green Front. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg. This is going to be a very hot month here, not just weather-wise, but great green guests galore coming up. Some of my all-time favorites, like organic architect and all-around smart and funny guy, Eric Corey Free, will be joining me on today's program in the second half, as well as some new heroes of mine today and coming up. Our first guest today is Reverend Paul Mayer. He is the co-founder of the Climate Crisis Coalition. He's been an activist for many noble causes for over 50 years. Can't wait for both of these interviews, starting in just a moment. So pour yourself a cup of green tea, pull up a chair, and cozy up to your computer. Next week on the Green Front, we'll have Dr. Michael Mann. He, of course, is one of the world's top climate scientists who found himself in the middle of the faux ClimateGate controversy. And we're also hoping to get the Maldives president himself, Mohamed Nasheed, the star of the moment, making the rounds. He was on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, on The Today Show, and he deserves all the press he can get. He is a fabulous figure, so inspiring, all 5 foot one or two of him. And he's the guy who, of course, is holding press conferences underwater in his island nation, trying to get the world to pay attention to the fact that they are dealing with climate change right now. This is not some far-off, distant thing. And he's making the rounds in the U.S., so hopefully we can get him on next week or the following week, since he has time, sadly, because he was ousted in a coup. You've probably heard about that, so we won't dwell on it. But this is April. This is Earth Month, Earth Day, of course, coming up on April 22nd. So what do you do when Earth Day is every day on your beat that I've been covering for 15 years? You try to get the best and brightest. And that's what I promise we'll have each week here on the Green Front. Don't want to delay any further because I am very excited to welcome my first guest to today's show, Father Paul Mayer. He's, as I mentioned, for more than 50 years has provided service to so many good causes, and most recently the Earth. He spent 18 years as a Benedictine monk. He was involved in the civil rights movement in the South. He worked in the barrios of Central America. He participated in the effort to end the war in Vietnam, as well as co-founding peace and environmental organizations, including one of my favorites, and that is the Climate Crisis Coalition, started back in 2003, so way ahead of his time. And I was reading through your bio, Paul Mayer. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
And here I am calling you Reverend and Father, and I learned that you were born a Jew, and your family were refugees from Nazi Germany. You grew up in Washington Heights in Manhattan. Perhaps you knew my mother. I'm from Cabrini Boulevard.
Wow.
So I'm really interested to hear how you became the unlikely Catholic, and especially how you became perhaps the unlikely activist for so many great causes. So it is my pleasure and honor to welcome you to the program.
Thanks, Betsy. Very nice to be with you.
So we're going to get to the good stuff in just a moment. What's going on now? What's coming up as far as big action that your organization is organizing with other great green groups around Earth Day? But just, you've got such an interesting, eclectic, unusual background. Just sort of summarize your life, if you could. You know, what were some key pivotal points? Because I love hearing, you know, how people became, you know, so concerned about the environment. But you had many other causes that were clearly close to your heart at various times. Looks like one or two each decade of your life.
Yes. Well, it seems to me, as I look back over my life, I was 81 in February, but still going at
Michael
it.
Tough. Good
I'm
for
also,
you.
I'm also a yoga teacher and practitioner, and that keeps me strong and relatively clear. But as I look back at my life, I think one of the deciding moments was my traumatic childhood, in that we had to flee Nazi Germany as Jewish refugees under Hitler and just barely escaped. And I think that childhood trauma gave me an instinctive passion for justice and to try to relieve human suffering. And I think that has stayed with me all through my life, for better or for worse. I've done some wonderful things and made many mistakes as well.
Haven't we all? And what brought you to the climate crisis? And I love what you say, that the goal of this organization is really to convey a sense of urgency around what we're facing as far as global warming, and to broaden the constituency of this overarching issue beyond the traditional environmental organizations.
Well, you know, Betsy, it's interesting because I've been a passionate peace and justice advocate for decades. But one night about, I think it was 2003, I literally woke up in the middle of the night, sat straight up in my bed, and said, "My God, it's global warming." And it suddenly just became so clear to me that this was the overarching issue that is facing our beautiful planet Earth and its creatures and humans as well, and that it is going to in some way overshadow all the other great issues, or maybe more correctly, include them, unfortunately, the economy, poverty, war, and international conflict of every kind. And I just came away from that we needed to create a new kind of coalition that included everybody, because all the issues are indeed in some way affected by climate change. And so, along with some other people, and we were inspired to found the Climate Crisis Coalition, and we've done many things over the years and tried to build a diverse movement, which I think we still don't really fully have, you know, that I think even though there is an eco justice component of our movement that is doing great work, I still long for a really integrated, diverse environmental movement, which I think the Earth needs and deserves.
Couldn't agree more. And the reason that really resonates with me is, you know, when people would say, well, there's, you know, there's NRDC, there's the Sierra Club, there's Greenpeace, you know, they're really getting word out. And so why do we need, you know, in my case, trying to get, you know, media to cover green issues and get a designated program for these very urgent, compelling, you know, universal challenges we face with the clock ticking ever louder. But there's, unfortunately, they're kind of like they're the usual suspects. And God bless them, all these great groups that have been, you know, Environmental Defense Fund really raising the alarm and raising money, but they seem to be too easily dismissed as sort of, yeah, we know, they care about the environment. It seems like we need more people like yourself, you know, religious leaders, veterans, mothers, and just, you know, daily, you know, people in their daily lives who are concerned about this to really raise their voices and say, you know, this is not just, you know, for the green, you know, activists, this is for all of us, because of course it most certainly will impact all of us.
Yes, exactly, and particularly, Betsy, I feel the faith community needs to play a cutting-edge role in this whole movement. And, of course, most of the great denominations have statements, and this is all to the good, and many of them are doing good things, but what inspired the action, and can I talk a little bit about what we're planning in Washington?
Absolutely.
This is a new grouping that has come together relatively recently in a very disparate group of people, not famous, not highly placed, even in the religious world. But it was inspired by the realization that consciousness about this life and death issue for the planet, and for its creatures, really, is being minimized. And one of the most troubling polls is that in the year, I think, 2007, American public consciousness about this was at about 60%, and it has now gone down to 40. And you see the same low level of awareness, consciousness, or understanding reflected in the legislature and the Congress. I think some extent in the White House, even though the administration says good things. And, of course, in the media. That's why we value shows like your own. And I believe all of this has a great deal to do with the fact that the fossil fuel industry and the Koch brothers and people like that are pouring billions of dollars into, to use an unfortunate analogy, into submerging this issue, minimizing it on public awareness. So we felt the time had come for the communities of faith to come together in some kind of dramatic way to really raise this as the greatest moral and spiritual issue of our times. And so we came up with this idea. During Earth Week, we are planning a day. The group is called IMAC, I-M-A-C, and it stands for Interfaith Moral Action on Climate Change. And we're planning a day of action in Washington during Earth Week on April the 24th. It's a Tuesday. And we will be, well, let me just say that we have brought together a very interesting and I think much broader a spectrum of the religious community than is usually about this. We include in our numbers some key leaders from the evangelical community, more progressive sector that is very deeply concerned about this. We have some African-American leaders, and while this community, of course, is going to be one of the most affected by climate disasters and already has been, as in New Orleans and the Horn of Africa right now, where a terrible, terrible drought and famine is going on. And so we have, for example, the president of the National Progressive Baptist Convention, which is the second largest African-American denomination. We have representatives from the NAACP. We have Native Americans, as well as the United Church of Christ and many of the Christian groups and Jewish groups. And we are coming together then. We will begin our day with a vigil at the Martin Luther King Memorial, a sunrise vigil, as our inspiration for eco-justice, being just to the earth and being just to all life on the planet. And then we are going to have a powerful interfaith service. We're naming it the Cry of the Earth, Healing the Climate, at New York Avenue Presbyterian Church, which is one of the oldest church in Washington. It's actually a church in which Abraham Lincoln worshipped. And we will have a service that includes reflections and scriptures, and we're having part of it which we're calling Witness to the Wounding of the Earth, and we're having witnesses from Appalachia, from the Bayou region, from Native American lands, from the urban inner city poverty communities, witnessing as to how these have all been wounded by climate dangers and by the rise in temperature and the poisoning of the air. And so we will begin the service with the Islamic call to prayer and the Jewish shofar, and a rabbi will also lead us in a Kaddish for the earth, mourning the victims that have already been taken, and then end the service with a dramatic procession down to the Capitol, where we will respectfully confront the members of Congress and present them with a report card, which thus far has a big red F on it. To say the time has come for the Congress and also for the administration to take some serious action, and I might add also to include this in the electoral campaigns. This cannot be any more allowed to be a tangential issue, but has to be at the very center of everything that's happening. And we're not just talking about the price of oil, a price of gasoline. We're talking about a life and death issue that is tearing away at the soul of this country.
Wow, you said a lot, and I could go in a lot of different directions, but you just made my hair on my arms rise up and gave me goosebumps when you said Kaddish for the earth, because for those who don't know, that is the prayer that we say for the dead, and that is how it feels like, you know, the planet seems to be screaming, you know, Mother Earth seems to be screaming before it's too late, you know, save me so I can save you, so I can support you. And as so many just turn the other way, especially our so-called leaders, and mock those of us who are trying to bring attention to this issue, it's really, well, hypocrisy comes to mind, but it's just confounding, and it is deeply frustrating when things are clearly that urgent and time is so short that you would say a Kaddish for the earth.
Yeah, that is very moving, and a wonderful rabbi is going to do this, so I know it's going to be very profound. And one other thing that I neglected to mention, we're asking people to bring a handful of earth to the service, and at the door we will have this beautiful aquamarine shell, a large bowl in which people will put these handfuls of earth, and they will then be carried by Mama Bear, who is one of the clan mothers from the Akwesasne Nation, will be carried up the aisle of the church, and then there will be a blessing of that earth. So I think that's going to be very dramatic. And also, since we're speaking to people who may not make it to Washington, although we hope many of you will come, and we don't conceive of the faith communities in a narrow way, because we know there are many people of goodwill and people who have ethical values who also feel very deeply about this, and we hope they will join us. But for people who are unable to come, we're encouraging people to have vigils in their home houses of worship, or out on the street, or in front of places that symbolize environmental degradation and climate wounding, and asking them to have vigils on that same day. And we have more information about all of this on our website, which is www.interfaithactiononclimatechange.org.
So you're saying to Congress, enough is enough in terms of ignoring and even suppressing legislation that might begin to, you know, turn us around in terms of addressing our greenhouse gas emissions, and of course the emissions that were spewed decades ago are in the atmosphere now, and even if we stopped everything tomorrow, which isn't going to happen, we'd still have impacts, you know, in the next few decades and perhaps beyond, and this is of course uncharted territory. What about the hypocrisy of the Republican Party leaders who talk about family values and they're so religious and pious, and yet, you know, look what they're doing to creation. I know Reverend Sally Bingham, a longtime activist here in the Bay Area and proud to say friend of mine, has been pointing out that Earth Day was not the beginning of the environmental movement. It began with Mother Earth, and creation goes way back, and yet here it is 2012 and it's just beyond belief, the disconnect, I guess, and not just with our leaders but with the public, but of course Americans are not hearing much about this at the top, in Congress, on television, radio, as a really urgent crisis that needs our attention, all of our attention, and so it's kind of business as usual. And yet you're saying Kaddish for Mother Earth. It seems like there's kind of parallel universes, and that's what I've been trying to bridge here, with programs and interviews with people who are on the on the leading edge here, and saying, this is a matter of great urgency, and we're just not seeing a response where we need it.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. The hypocrisy and ignorance of our to think that we have congressional leaders who literally don't believe in climate change, as if it were a tenet of belief rather than scientific evidence.
As if it was Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny.
Exactly. And one of our leading senators has just written a book to celebrate his ignorance about denying global warming. I mean, it's just the rest of the world, which is not necessarily up to par either, but some of the European countries and others, they just look at us in awe to think that we have people in our national legislature who literally deny the existence of this tremendous danger. And as you say, the double value, this belief in the sacredness of life and all the other things connected with it, that opposing one of the greatest threats to all forms of life on the planet that is just rolling towards us like a great tidal wave, and only God knows what it will take to awaken us. I remember seeing a panel at the Museum of Natural History, and this famous physicist was asked, well, Professor, what is your prognosis about all this? And he said, most people don't change their lives until after the first heart attack.
Mm.
And my fear is that that is indeed what it might take unless, unless we wake up, except we're going to be awakened by some terrible disaster, which I pray will not happen.
Aren't we seeing it with these incredibly damaging twisters and tornadoes and record heat waves that are already, melting temperature records just in the month of March? Hundreds of them went down already in April, as we heard at the top of the hour in the Green News Report. Records are being broken, and cherry blossoms are coming to bloom early. And this is not only, maybe a little bit nice because we're getting mild weather, and cherry blossoms are beautiful to behold, but of course what we're doing is messing with Mother Nature and the intricate ecosystem that is our life support. And it's pretty evident. I mean, I think we can no longer say it's going to take till we have some crisis for people to wake up. I mean, it may be a crisis that feels good in the moment, but if anyone just connects the dots a little bit, they can see that something is really wrong here. And, if it's only going to get worse and we're still not beginning to address it or even acknowledge it's real, we're talking at the leadership level of this country, our country contributing the most, in terms of per capita CO2, it doesn't bode well. So what gives you hope? How do you get up every day after all this, a lifetime of activism on so many important causes, and really believe that we can turn this thing around in time?
Well, it's funny. I was just going to address the question of hope myself, because I always feel, as a longtime organizer, we can't leave people with a feeling of despair. What gives us hope? Well, there's one thing I have learned in my many years of political organizing, that as an organizer, in spite of brilliant ideas and logistics and programs and projects, there is always the element of surprise. I look at, in some way, as a religious person, maybe the spirit is the spirit of surprise, that we do not know what is around the corner, not only in terms of disaster, but in terms of new doors opening. And I see our gathering in Washington as one expression of hope, that we're coming together around and that we're putting aside whatever doctrinal differences we may have to unite our belief in the sacredness of the earth, and that we need to keep on doing our work, keeping our hands on the helm, as it were, and trusting in each other, even as we know the situation is serious. So that is where, and one example I will give of that element of surprise, I've been doing some work with the young people from Occupy Wall Street, and I think that is a very exciting development, and it's young people that give me a lot of hope, and some of them actually just had a very exciting action at the UN about a week ago on climate change and on air pollution, and I think they're making a lot of interesting plans for the spring, and I have been part of a group called Occupy Faith, which brings together clergy and religious people to support the whole Occupy movement. And there's a lot of interest there on the issue of climate change, and I think a tremendous determination, general spirit of nonviolence, and, of course, putting their fingers on the basic pathology of our society, namely the maldistribution of the riches of the earth. And that is what climate change is about. I mean, the basic analysis must be that one of greed and corrupt power, and putting those values ahead of life, pushing coal, pushing oil, but ultimately, in spite of all this, finding faith in each other and building a powerful movement, and waking people up. That's our assignment, to wake people up. And I pray that our event in Washington will be just on April the 24th, will be just one more stepping stone to waking up the sleeping giant, which is the people.
Ah, that's what I talk about. Awakening the slumbering masses, what will it take? And perhaps with the unusual weather we've had with the early spring and short winters, which, you know, can also be, you know, intense rain and snow in some areas. It's just, you know, it's the quick changes. It's the extremes that we're seeing everywhere. And if people, you know, don't see that as a meteorological wake-up call, you're saying this is a moment for a moral tipping point. And because April seems to be the month, you know, at least, if nothing else, Americans tune in usually on Earth Day, and media does the, you know, obligatory Earth Day story, this being, you know, time of spring and time to kind of get in touch with Mother Nature traditionally. And, of course, it should be much more than that. But also with this election coming up in November, with so much hanging in the balance, and let's say it, you know, with all of the Republican candidates, and probably going to be Romney, but he among them, who used to believe in climate change, and we've got tape, you know, we played it last week of him saying that, suddenly, you know, disbelieving it, mocking, you know, those who would say we need to do something about it, including, you know, President Obama, who's fortunately starting to speak out more about the need to make the shift to more renewable energy sources and to, you know, stop the subsidies for oil companies. We need him to step up in a much bigger way, but, you know, let's just face it, if we get a Republican in the White House, we're not going to have a very green future.
Yes, well, I think people of goodwill need to greet our candidates, first of all, the presidential candidates, but also congressional candidates, wherever they appear, and ask them about this issue and challenge them on this issue and insist that they take a position, and a position in favor of the climate of the earth and in favor of the American people, because we know that this is not only a life issue, it's an economic issue, and we have to develop a green economy which would create many jobs and new possibilities, and we just have to change our direction. And of course, Betsy, this is we are dealing with an addictive situation. We are addicted to fossil fuel, we are addicted to consumerism, and I believe the time has come when we examine that, and as so many addicts learn, that in breaking the addiction you find greater joy, greater life, more possibilities, and having less gross material possessions also opens up new possibilities of community and living more fully and enjoying the earth. I think that's a very central issue. It's a moral issue. It's a political issue. It's not some sentimental kind of New Age vagueness, you know, when you say breaking the addiction. This is real, and I think it's a central challenge to our culture today.
And I think it's appropriate that you're giving Congress, you know, report card and a grade of F standing for fossil fools and fuels, and I hope there's some religious people, some pious people, you know, out there in the fossil fuel industry. I have to think there's a few, and they will hopefully hear the wake-up call. That's what we need, is to really reach somebody who suddenly has that eco-epiphany, as you did, as many green-leaning people have, to really make it. Maybe even the Koch brothers can be saved. I'm working on trying to get to Charles Koch. Actually, my Pilates teacher knows him, so that's my fantasy, that I can get him in a room for 30 minutes and change the course of climate change action.
I totally agree. We shouldn't give up on anybody. I've had a few off the record meetings with some high level people in one of the big oil companies who happened to be religious people, and I felt that there was something, really some possibilities there. We don't want to demonize our opponents. I don't think that's useful. And
we do need to call them out. I think we do need to identify them and really, you know, point to the source of the problem, because yes. I think many of us thought that once we got the information out there, people would wake up, and now we see what we're up against. There's a very, you know, well-orchestrated, well-funded, deep-pocketed campaign to keep us in the dark, if you would. And thank you for being a light, and thank you for organizing this event. I wish I could be with you. If I can't physically, I will be in spirit. I'll tell everyone I know about it, especially in the Washington area. And I want to wish you a very happy Easter and Passover, since
you
are.
Thank you, and to you, and perhaps you can have a vigil in San Francisco.
I think we will. I think I'll organize one at my synagogue just north of San Francisco.
Should I give the website again?
Please do.
www.interfaithactiononclimatechange.org. Among other things, we have a beautiful flyer you can download. And we welcome all support. Come to Washington. Bring your earth. or have a beautiful vigil in your home community. And you can find more about that on our website as well. And to you, Betsy, too, a good Yontif, and a beautiful Easter to all. May this be a season of new life, of spring, that always the earth is, Mother the Earth is determined to keep coming back. Let us follow her example.
Paul Mayer, thank you for giving me and I'm sure our listeners so much hope. And I say God bless you and go forth and greenify.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll be speaking with Eric Corey Fried, one of my favorite original green building experts. He's the organic architect, but he's so much more. Stay with us. Eric Corey Fried up next on The Green Front.